The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome into Highway to Health. I am David Sears. Today's topic is about men's mental health. Men's mental health is a conversation that is starting to become more frequent. Men, for the most part, have been taught to suppress their emotions and not display signs of weakness to other men by sharing their feelings, often making them feel alone and isolated. Today, we are joined by clinical psychologist from UAB, Dr. Josh Klapo, to help talk about this subject. Dr. Klapo, thank you very much for joining us today.
Good to be with you, David.
As always, he's a genius and a man. I love having him on. Former U.S. Surgeon General Vivek H. Murthy addressed this issue in 2014 with an article in the Harvard Business Review saying that loneliness epidemic for men was a serious health problem. Despite being more connected now than at any point in human history, more men tend to find themselves lonely and in search of companionship. Loneliness can have the same effect on a lifespan as smoking 15 cigarettes a day and has a greater impact than obesity. So, what is this about men that makes it so hard for them to reach out to other men or to other people to seek help?
Ooh, huge topic, right? Because you can sort of think about it. Let's think about all the layers that factor in here. We have generational differences. Can we say men? These are men ranging from age 0 to 100. Right. So within that, lots of generational differences. That's number one. Number two, sort of, let me take a step back, because a lot of what we're going to talk about today, we're overgeneralizing. And I always, you know me, like I hate saying, our good buddy Tony will say, you know, I speak for all men. I have a really hard time with that. A lot of the statements I'm going to make are overgeneralized and they don't apply to everybody. But I think that's important because these are going to be a little bit sweeping. But I think the other thing, in addition to being generational differences, men are socialized to interact with other men at a much less intimate level. When I mean intimate, sharing of thoughts, feelings, emotions. And so you got generational differences. You have kind of the way men are supposed to be with other men in terms of what we talk about and how we connect, and even the frequency of how often we get together as compared to women. So you got that. You do have still the stigma of men and what are appropriate emotions for them to show. Sadly, those tend to be, you know, happiness, stress, anger. Mm. That's not a whole lot more. And so, and then the third thing is, men are very often not taught well and not reinforced over the course of their development or how to be emotionally communicative. Like we're not, society doesn't reward us for doing that. And so as a result, we keep pulling back in. So what do you got? You've got men who are not very good at talking about their feelings, are not socialized to talk to one another about their feelings. And then depending on how old you are, grew up in a environment where that wasn't done as well. And so that's a whole lot of input for not communicating about how you feel. And this is where some of that loneliness stuff starts to really come in.
Now, when I was doing my research, I found out that during the school year, there's an average of 1.37 school shootings a day, and a majority of the perpetrators are angry and lonely young men. Dr. Yep. Niobe Way, a professor of psychology at New York University, showed through her studies that 85% of boys want an emotionally intimate male friend, but for the reason you said, have difficult finding other young boys they can trust because they're told by elders to man up, or that wanting friendship with another boy is girly or quote gay. And the thing that struck me the most was when during her study, she showed that when boys hit 15 or 16, their intimate emotional male friendships start to decline because they become more isolated, and that boys are 5 times more likely to commit suicide than the girls of the same age because of that loneliness they feel. And that was just striking to me, especially when you're seeing this, the school shooter, who most of the time are lonely people who feel rejected by everyone else, don't feel like they can connect with anyone, and they lash out, unfortunately, by murdering other people.
I mean, just a pause. Like, how sad is that? How sad is it that somebody will in our society, in our highly connected society, would feel lonely, isolated, and not able to connect? And it is so easy to say, well, there's all these opportunities, you know, they don't do it. There's something wrong with them. And what I said in the very beginning, there's all these opportunities, but there's all these signals out there that say it's not the right thing to do, or you don't do it, or we don't do it, or it's not okay.
What? I know you and I have talked about this before back on the web, but do you think the drive towards social media and everyone being on their phones and just being in the world of social media and in the internet digital world is causing this divide? Or do you still think there's a way to connect even though you're not physically with the person in the same room?
You know, I think you see this, what you are seeing in digital mental health interventions, companies, products, services is really telling to the problem we kind of find ourselves in. On the one hand, you can connect. You're not limited to any place that you are geographically. You can find a friend on the other side of the world. And you can see that friend. You don't have to just type. You don't have to, you know, you can get about as many human cues minus smell, you know, is possible, which is very important for us because we are social beings. We don't get fulfillment just from words or just from audio. We need all of it, minus if you are, you know, if you can't hear, if you can't see, then other senses pick up, etc. But here's the problem. We have all this access, but we still don't know. We're not good at doing it. We don't teach boys how to connect digitally in a healthy emotional way. So just because the technology rails are there doesn't mean that it's innate and we will just use it. So if you think about it, there can be an absolute opposite effect. Here I am. I can see the world, right, by being on my phone. I can see people live in whatever social media outlet you want. And I don't know what to say. Or even worse, sometimes because people have that anonymity of being not physically present, people say nasty things. And so this very technology that can be a conduit to help men, very often goes the other way. But that is why you are seeing, whether it's at the universities, private companies are really getting behind not just connecting men, but teaching boys, men, how to interact in a more emotionally healthy way as an intervention using the digital platforms.
With this advent of digital platforms, we've seen Reddit groups, Discords, I forget what's the other ones, but these like little small intimate communities. And it is amazing to me how a lot of times these people start off sympathizing and empathizing and then turn on each other. And it's do you think it's because it's so hard to take context and tone through just typing?
Yes. I see in every, I'm thinking in sort of every aspect of the clients and people that I work with, from athletes to couples to business people, the misunderstanding through text or written communication only is mind-boggling. We don't know how to convey, and in some cases it is impossible to convey what we want to say at an emotional level. So again, you run into exactly what you just said. Either the emotional content like falls off, or it gets misunderstood, and then there's backlash. And then the people who need the connection either are, you know, pushed back against, or it becomes kind of aversive and they don't engage. And, you know, that is not unique to men. But if you go back to the same thing and you go, okay, we're not very good at it, we don't practice it very much, we're not socialized to do it, and now we're put in a situation where if we're going to do it in written form, we better be really good. I can't tell you, David, how often I have to work with male executives who are trying to communicate to their, not their whole company, but maybe other people they work with. And these are men who are kind and generous and all that kind of stuff, right? But when you see what they write, you look at it and you're like, okay, you just communicated that you're being clear and direct, and it sounds like you're being punitive to the other person. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't mean that. I know you didn't mean it, but that's the byproduct. And that's where we have to, there are so many places, David, where we can intervene in this. And I don't mean intervene in formal interventions, and maybe we'll get into that about, you know, from day one birth to the way that we socialize people. There's lots of opportunity to do this differently.
With this new technology, like you said, there's other things, but I think one of the hardest things for men is physical interaction. Like, you're supposed to do a bro hug. You're not supposed to, or a high five, right, or something. You're not supposed to give your bro a hug. But like, to me, I'm very much a hugger. Now, I've changed, I've had to change because I've become more aware of like, not everyone is a person that wants touch. It's like, you want a fist bump or a hug? So I've started asking that now before doing that. But what do you think the lack of physical touch does to people? Because humans are people that need physical touch.
What's interesting to me is this gets into a little bit of the generational differences. It's just really, I find this fascinating. I haven't studied this, you know, at a scientific level. Remind me how old you are.
Just turned 43.
Okay. So I'm 57. And if you take, let's go one cohort below you, take my kid's age, late 20s. Okay. Mm-hmm. My age group, we firm handshake, maybe a bro hug if you're a mushy sort of person. That is an appropriate, to your point, appropriate with qualifications, male-to-male interaction amongst heterosexual males, right? And it's got all these qualifications, like even like you're saying, would you like a handshake or would you like a hug, right? And you think about women your generation, my generation, I mean, they don't all hug each other all the time, but it's a much more natural fluid. There's not all these qualifiers, but you take a generation, maybe one below you, just slightly below you. This show of physical affection is much more prevalent. And this is even among, I mean, we got now COVID kids and we got all that kind of stuff, but it's much more acceptable in a non-qualified way. The guys hug each other. Now, again, there's regional differences, there's racial differences, there's ethnic differences. But if you put all that together, what you're seeing is, and this is a good thing, you're seeing this increase of male to male physical touch as being normalized, which is good because it fosters more emotional connection. Remember, loneliness is a psychological state. Being alone or isolation is a physical or an environmental state. And so the reason I'm saying that is for men to not be lonely requires psychological and emotional action, not just standing amongst your bros. That may lead to less loneliness, but it doesn't inherently do it just because you're standing there.
So when we talk about this, we are seeing a lot of loneliness, and part of that could be a reflection of American society, because Americans have always been taught rugged individualism. A study by Gene Twenge, Keith Campbell, and Brittany Gentile showed that our self-obsession and isolation are increasing. In their study, the pronoun use in the Google Books database of 766,513 American books published between the years of 1960 and 2008 have the first person plural pronouns, such as we, decreased by 10%. So this focus on individualism and I don't need anybody else, I'm a self-made man. Do you think this push has kind of fed into the loneliness epidemic and the struggle with men's mental health?
Yeah. So I think the thing that you're making a good point of is now let's bring in a broader piece of this. Let's bring in the divisiveness of where we are as a country, right? We've gotten super tribal, us versus them. But then if you think about some of the ways that we interact, us versus them is easy to then sort of go into I'm looking out for myself and my family. And it fosters the stereotype. My job to protect myself, my family. That's what it's all about. There's nothing more. And the thing that's so sad to me, and I say sad, and I don't mean sad in a pathetic way. I mean sad. I am a 57-year-old male. So I am in the group. You're a 43-year-old male. You're in the group. To your point about the studies and sort of the physical impacts, physiological impacts of loneliness, it's literally killing us. So like here we are all capable and hardy and do it on my own and all that. And the research is super clear. It doesn't fare well for you. You're not going to. You're more likely to die early, have more health problems, have more psychiatric problems than if you were more emotionally connected and socially connected to other men. Full stop. So as men, not only do we need to get over it because the stigma of sort of mental health doesn't serve us well, but take it one step further. Forget mental health problems, just men and psychological, emotional interaction. We don't live in a society where everything is, you know, we talk about a zero sum game. I win, you lose. In fact, those men who are able to connect emotionally and socially with other men do better in everything. I think the problem for a lot of men is even if they know that or they believe what you and I are saying, we now have another part, which is, I don't really know how to do that. And if you're over 12 and, you know, it gets harder and harder and harder and harder. And I think then you fall into this belief that, well, I don't know how to do that. I can just do things on my own. And you can, but you will not fare better in your relationships, in your profession, in your physical health, in any athletics, and in your longevity. Again, full stop. This is not, that's not debatable. You will do better if you do not isolate yourself and you have intimate emotional connection with other men.
Getting to men and the opposite sex, for the most part, it's a heteronormative society. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing, a bigger divide now between men and women trying to date, where women are just so fed up with men and their emotional unavailability or emotional immaturity. Is there a way to teach boys how to become emotionally mature? Like, is there a class or is there something? What, as a clinical psychologist, how would you reach out to help these men, young men, become more emotionally available, emotionally mature for women?
No, I think it's just so great. I'm laughing because, you know, I have two kids. I have a son and a daughter. And my daughter's in her 20s. And, you know, it's like my wife was like, say, it is slim pickings out there, because you're right. I mean, if you think about, it's not just, I think a lot of times for heterosexual males will say, oh, it's, women make it too complicated. You know, it's too complicated. And they're, why can't they just? And, you know, what I say is, you got to level up your game, because what they're asking for is not an impossibility, but it is something that you may not be inherently good at. And so what ends up happening is, again, the divide gets greater and greater. Where, you know, how can we get boys better at this? You're seeing it in schools. In a very interesting way that, again, generationally, if you take kind of my generation, I don't know about your generation in your 40s. We weren't taught in kindergarten and up about regulating our emotions, or kind of how to deal with tough emotions. That's a big part now. You see this in elementary school. It's a very common thing. It's not a class, but kids are taught, young boys are taught, what do we do with when we feel sad? What do we do with when we feel angry? What do we do with, you know, and it goes beyond just don't hit somebody. What do we do with, how do we deal with feeling embarrassed? So for me, that's incredibly encouraging, because it's creating a normative, healthy, lesson for kids.
Okay.
Yeah. So yes, we see it in schools. Very good. The next place you have to show it, and again, this comes down to it's parents of, I mean, it's got to happen at home. It's got to happen at home. And so the whole dad doesn't talk about his feelings is, that's great for dad, but it needs to be, dad doesn't talk about his feelings. And that's something dad needs to work on. He's not very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and when I say that, that can be mom saying it, or that can be dad saying, you know what, I'm not really good at talking about feelings. You need to talk about your feelings. You need to tell me about your feelings so that you get good at it, versus this sort of generational, because dad's not good at it, we don't promote it. That's that. The other thing is, and I'm just kind of going to where you see kids get plugged in, obviously school, athletics, young boys in athletics. I mean, some of this, you know, your listeners are going to go, oh my God, what is he doing? This is how boys are hardwired. Boys are hardwired to do stupid boy things and they hit each other. Yes. Boys do dumb things. And if you ever watch, like a middle school, athletic team, a female team and a male team, pick a sport like basketball, and you watch the dynamics, the how they interact, the level of sophistication in communication, in reading emotions on a girl's team is light years ahead of a boy's team. Boys get mad and hit each other. And we like to laugh at that. We go, see how simple it is. But let me tell you, by the time a boy then reaches a job, they don't know how to communicate in a more healthy way. So the other place I was going to say is in athletics, teaching our mutual friend, Rachel Barbeau. It's a great example of going in, Rachel going in to football teams and teaching men, young men, about how to express emotions in a healthy way. This doesn't mean that we're giving hugs to the other team when we're trying to tackle them. Like, it's not the same. Mm-hmm. But doing those things has two benefits. One, it actually is teaching. When you feel, this happens, I see this a lot of times, actually men across the board. When we feel embarrassed, anxious, sad, or ashamed, very often we express it as irritability and anger. That's how it comes out, partly because it scares us. We don't know what to do with it, so we get internally frustrated. So teaching athletes, young male athletes, when you're embarrassed, when you're sad, when you have empathy, when you have a teammate who's going through a really tough time, how do you talk to them? How do you not just tell them, man up, or it's going to be okay? These things are so critical across the board. And I think there's this giant fear that we're going to become this touchy-feely society. You see all the time? Let me tell you, touchy-feely society is a much more sophisticated society. Go talk to anyone in the military, anyone on the front lines, any special forces. Sure, when they're in the middle of an ops, no, they're not. Their brain is focused on duty, their duty. But the love that they have and express for the people that they're right next to is usually 10 times what maybe you and I would do. It has to be, because that's how trust is built. And this is, to me, the sad thing is, like, as guys, oh my God, we sit right in it. Like, we hug each other when our teams win. We'll pat each other on the butt, you know, when we do a good job. We'll tell, I love you, brother. I love you. Great. That's it. Like, we have to just do that, though, not only in a very narrow social context. And then I don't know if you're going to go to this part, but then we also have to be able to deal with when stuff gets much more serious than just promoting male interaction, when one of our buddies is really suffering psychologically.
Well, that actually ties into our next point. A study done by a Harvard psychologist, W.T. Grant, and then Harvard professor, Dr. Arlie Bock, W.T. Grant, a business owner, wanted to focus on what made men healthy. They chose 268 students from the classes of 1942, 43, and 44. Again, this was all white men, as Harvard wasn't integrated with minorities or women at the time. And they were studying the insights about what made men successful. And they found out that during this long study that was still going on during the 80s, that people with warmer, closer connections lived longer, developed the diseases of middle age less soon, and had better health longer than average people who didn't have the types of relationships to have someone to turn to during those tough times. So that study, to me, I thought was very eye-opening, that there it's scientifically backed that if you have close, intimate friendships, that helps you become a healthier overall person, not only mentally healthy, but physically as well. So I don't know if you'd heard of that study before. I figured you had, because you're one of the smartest psychologists I know.
No, but it's just such a, I mean, listen to what you just said. I mean, I think we have to be careful as men to not go, well, yeah, I've got all these buddies that I care about. Like, that may or may not mean a close connection. Like, we have to be careful that just because there's all these guys that you hang out with, that in itself does not mean that you have close connection. That's a there's a step further to that. It's emotionally intimate. And you hear me using the word intimate over and over again. I think it's really important for us as men to get very comfortable with understanding what emotional intimacy means between men, because when we don't have that, that's what puts us at risk for feeling isolated and puts us at risk for things like depression, etc. A guy can have 12 buddies that he does all kinds of things with. If he feels scared to tell them he's struggling, or if he tells them he's struggling, let's say struggling, maybe it's problems at home, in a marriage, he's anxious, whatever. Or if he says it and they respond in a way that, in a positive way that kind of shuts it down, you're going to be okay. Hang out with us. It'll all be good. Now that guy, that male does not, that is not an emotionally intimate connection. So
it's part of me. I think one of the problems with some of the younger generation right now we're seeing is the brosphere influence, like your Andrew Tate's, like your Joe Rogan's, your brosphere, who I know Andrew Tate, his opinion on women and dating and all that is ridiculously controversial. But I think we're having so many voices out there for what not to do and what not to have a healthy relationship that it's some of these kids are getting it because it is frustrating for them. She doesn't like me. Well, why doesn't she like you? Is it just a purely respect thing, or is it because is it a purely looks thing, or is it because you're not respecting her as an individual? You know, so it's interesting. Do you watch King of the Hill?
Yes.
Did you see the new season? New season came out back in August. They did an episode where Hank's little brother, Good Hank, GH, is going to basically an Andrew Tate seminar, and Hank Hill deconstructs the entire movement. It is one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen. And it was just him like, look, the reason girls don't like you is because you're so obsessed with yourself. You're not trying to find their right. And it was just all this amazing insight that Hank was just being open and honest with. And some of these dudes started realizing that, and they said, oh, we need to follow you. He's like, no, don't follow me. You need to learn this from others. But it's just hard to have a positive male influence nowadays. Who's teaching you about emotional health? Who's teaching you about go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So let's say a couple of things. One, your close emotional relationships, like, it takes work and time. You know, like, this is not, they don't just happen. And it's the same for women. Like, they don't instantly form close relationships. So it's really important that you understand as a male, that you have to put in the effort. And the effort is not just spending time. It's sharing your thoughts and feelings, or saying to someone real explicitly, your buddy, hey, if you're struggling or if you got something in your mind, man, I'm here. You can talk to me about anything. Those kinds of statements are things that have to happen. That's one. Two, Joe Rogan's a really good example. Are any of us in Joe Rogan's inner circle? No. I mean, maybe some of your listeners are. I'm not. You're not. I don't know. You don't know, and I don't know, that Joe Rogan doesn't have an intensely tight, intimate male circle who he counts on, who particularly in a guy in his profession where knowing who to trust, who he can share his information with and who he can't is critical. I would not be surprised if Joe Rogan, despite whatever he says, has his dear friends. So, you know, my PSA here is, do not look to the celebrities, whether they be social media influencers, podcasters, whatever. Don't look to the celebrities and assume that what they're saying also reflects exactly the way they live their lives, good or bad. And because in many ways, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Your, as a man, your intimate relationship, and I keep saying it over and over again, feeling, being able to talk to another man about anything, thoughts, feelings, fears, shame, any of it, excitement, love, that is A, can be very private. It's not like, again, this is not bro hugs. Bro hugs are socially appropriate. Hey, you can still have a very close relationship that doesn't, that is not as public. So you can keep it private. You have to work on it. Not all of your friends have the ability to do that. And so I think the expectation that just because one friend can't go there means that all of them, it's not true. Another thing is, very often, this is the classic male thing. I don't want to tell you about my feelings because I don't think you'll understand. You don't want to tell me about yours because you don't think I'll understand. We both are looking for somebody to connect with. You know, so being, who's going to have the courage to be the first one up to connect? And then I think also finally, there's a whole nother part that's safer than everything I've just talked about. It literally, I get this from my friend Rachel, this literally can come down to things like saying to your male friends, if there's anything you ever want to talk about, man, I am all ears and willing to be all ears. Saying to your male friends, look, man, I know we all get down sometimes, we get sad, we get nervous, using all the emotional words, we get nervous, we get afraid. Come talk to me when you're like that. Like, those kinds of sentences are not socially dangerous. And I would say, if you're listening to us and you are 15, 16, 17, I get that you may be rejected by some other guys saying that. But I'm also telling you that there are lots of guys out there who need that, who want that. And what it usually means is your level of emotional maturity is ahead. And at 50, the problem with being a teenager is there's so much variation in who's matured and who's not, you know? And then the last thing I would say is, parents, man, we are past. If you're a dad, I don't care what your sort of beliefs are. If you are shutting down your son's emotional breath, if you're saying, you know, you can be angry, you can be sad, but only for a short period of time, and you can be happy and that's it, you are harming your child. 100%, you are harming your child. And, you know, my response there would be, is that the kind of dad you want to be? I wouldn't.
Wow. That is a great point to end on. Dr. Josh, how can we find you on social media if we want to follow you?
I am at Dr. Josh K on Instagram, and Instagram, TikTok, everywhere is also at Mental Drive, one word, at Mental Drive. MentalDrive.com is my webpage. Try to post as much content as I possibly have time to.
There you go. Dr. Josh, thank you very much for joining us about this very serious topic. Hopefully we'll have you on again in the future to talk something else down the road. I appreciate you joining us. This has been Highway to Health on Tony Curry Radio. I'm David Sears. You can follow me on social media, on X at DavidSears75, on Instagram, DavidSears1982. For Dr. Josh, I'm David Sears with Highway to Health saying, have a great day.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.